All right. Welcome back to Frontside, the podcast, episode number 20. 20. We're like
20.
One-fifth of the way to 100. We're like twice into the double digits. It's...
Whenever I hear 20, I hear that in Barbara Walters' voice from like the 80s and 90s. This is 2020.
I don't. The episodes from 20s to 30s, we can do our best work, but have it all be wasted on beer and cigarettes.
Just to reflect our actual our actual 20s. That's pretty good. And then by episode 30, it's going to have to clean itself up a little bit. Look a little more respectable. At least pretend.
Get back to the dadding.
Yeah.
Which
but so many great dad casts I have planned.
Yeah.
We're going to
It's good that we get this chance to have this one just between you and I, because you know, we've got so many guests lined up. I think we got
it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
Let's not name any names just yet, but I'm very excited. We basically, we from all the wonderful people we met at EmberConf, we could book out with our current release rate. It would be more than a year to get to all the people we want to talk to, and it's which is a shame. But we'll do our darndest. So, but I don't want to hear about anything tech related right now. Can we not talk about technology just for a minute? Can we talk about food?
Yeah. I actually right. we can. I don't know how was your weekend in food, Brandon, because I had a pretty damn good weekend in food.
I would put my weekend against your weekend, but I heard about your weekend. So I want to hear about yours, and then I want to play the trump card.
Okay. Ooh, wow. Okay. Man, well, I'm walking into a trap, but I'll do so gladly, because what I have to share is at least for me, pretty epic. So I got back from EmberConf, and I was just feeling barbecue. So I went out for some barbecue on Friday. We went to Black's Barbecue. I got one of those the fatty brisket and sausage sandwich, and so any meat at Black's, any meat that you can get, you just buy it by the quarter pound, half pound, but they'll take any of your meats and they'll just plop it into a sandwich. So one of my favorite things to do is get a sandwich that's just brisket and sausage, and they slice the sausage up into nice thick enough so that it's hearty, but thin enough so that it's not cumbersome on the sandwich. So it just really kind of fits into your mouth well. And that was fantastic. So that was lunch Friday. And then I woke up on Saturday and we drove to Lockhart, which is a little town about an hour away from Austin. And
it's a little barbecue mecca, basically.
Yeah, it's a barbecue mecca. It's actually where Black's was from. And I thought, well, I want to go back to the source. I want to trace this back to the root cause. I want to go back to Lockhart. And so, but I didn't go to Black's. I went to Smitty's Market, which is a fantastic place where they have, just big, out in the parking lot, they have big piles of oak just sitting there, and you walk in, and then the oak fires are burning. They open at 7 a.m. They're serving the barbecue, so I think they must start, they're probably in there roasting 24 hours a day.
Wow.
in their cooking. And, they just have these just huge, juicy briskets, and got a couple of that and some baby back ribs. And, that it's one of those places where they just, they see that there were two of us. I went there with Cote. And so they take basically three sheets of construction paper or butcher paper and plop the barbecue down on the top one. And then to eat, you kind of pull out your sheet from underneath and you just eat with your hands and you use white bread as your napkin. And it was delicious. And then that night we went to the County Line, which is just, it's more of a, it has more of the creature comforts like knives and forks. Napkins at the table.
Wow, fancy.
Yeah, and pitchers for your draft beer. Overall, the County Line, for me at least, it's not a depth in terms of barbecue. Like, they don't have any one item on the menu that's just killer. All their beef ribs are pretty darn good. And they're just an all-around favorite. So if anybody is in town and wants to go on a barbecue safari, just let me know. It was, I don't think I've ever had like three barbecue three times in a 24-hour period, but I actually recommend it.
That's, okay.
So that was.
I don't know. That actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty much amazing.
Yeah. So now, you've talked it up.
No.
It's your turn to deliver.
No, I don't. I'm going to back off of that assertion. I did have a pretty amazing weekend food-wise. I went to the summit for people who do the kind of stuff that we do in technology services industry, and it was pretty amazing. It was in Charleston, South Carolina, and they were having the Food and Wine Festival mm-hmm. in town. And so they're very into the farm-to-table movement type stuff, and so they have a bunch of amazing restaurants, and they had some chefs come and prepare meals. And it was pretty much like, I don't know, there's no amount of money that I could have paid that I could have had a better set of meals than that. It was a pretty amazing weekend food wise. I got to try lots of things that I'd at that festival that I never would have tried otherwise. And all these crazy people are doing crazy stuff. People will put habanero in things that habanero shouldn't go in. And
like chocolate.
And there's apparently like 4,000 kinds of vinegar now. I had drinking vinegar, which is a thing apparently. Yeah, there's a place that serves drinking vinegar, like 10 flavors of drinking vinegar. So there's like grapefruit drinking vinegar, and you're supposed to serve it with soda. And I was like, you know what? That's actually pretty legit. It was pretty decent. So yeah, it was interesting. So I had an interesting. It wasn't the simple,
the unadulterated joy of
barbecue.
Yeah.
No, but you can't beat that. That's Christmas morning. Mm-hmm. That's Christmas morning of food. It's just, you know, wide-eyed. Oh my gosh, it's brisket. So, well, I'm glad. I'm glad we both had a phenomenal weekend food-wise.
It really tied the week together. I'm glad I did it. That's very uncharacteristic of me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've noticed your food habits are right back to whatever you can find within 5 minutes of the office today. Oh crap! It's 2:00. I have to get food here. Oh, here's some gas station sushi. You would eat that?
I would.
Yeah, out of expediency.
If it was within arm's reach, especially if it was on my desk.
It's just nice to see you care about it briefly, if only for then. So yeah, other things happened apparently in the world. While we weren't looking, or while we were looking even. This was a sizable week for the Ember community.
Yeah.
I don't want to undersell it. This EmberConf was a really big deal. This was the coming out party. This was like, hey, guess what, universe? This framework is actually ready for mass adoption. And every single talk that was there was a home run.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. I've never seen a conference where every talk was a home run, where every detail of the conference that was planned out was well thought out. It was the best conference I've ever been to.
Yeah, I have to concur. I concur. And everybody always says that. Maybe it's just like the state of the art is constantly advancing. And, you know, maybe everyone's glowing words and stuff really are true. But I've been to conferences
where I haven't said that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, I'm not gonna name names, but I've been to a lot of conferences recently, and a lot of them have been, you could tell which parts were sort of haphazardly done, or which parts, had thrown the organizers for a loop. And this is just thorough. This is the thorough understanding of someone. It's sort of like you ship really great software. Well, just because somebody ships great software doesn't mean they can ship a great software conference. And Leah Silber ships great software conferences. And this was her on top of her game. You could absolutely see the experience of going and attending the conference and learning and interacting with the community was so thoughtfully designed. And there were a couple things that happened. Like, first off, at the speaker dinner, I wanted to mention this. The speaker dinner the night before, Yehuda got up and gave a speech that was about, whether you like it or not, the people that are speaking at this conference are going to be recognized. Now, you and I got to be flies on the wall because we just gave a training. And so we got to attend the speaker dinner without having to be speakers. And so we got to kind of observe this. And Yehuda said, you know, as people who the community is going to look to, as people who are sort of leaders in the community, if you're speaking at the conference, sorry, that's just how it's going to be. You're in a really important position of being able to carry this message forward of being inclusive. And being inclusive is more than just not saying something offensive. Being inclusive is recognizing how you're being perceived by the people around you. So if you are holding like a tight circle with only people that you already know really well, and you see there are a lot of people there that you don't know, it's likely that you're being perceived as being excluded, or that person may feel excluded. Mm-hmm. And your job is to go around and look around and pick up on how people are feeling, whether they're feeling included or excluded, and go out of your way to make people feel included. So more than just being inclusive in terms of, you know, not like you'll see in a lot of codes of conduct, which is great, and they have that. But even more than that, go out of your way to say, hey, the leaders of this community are interested in bringing people from all skill levels and all backgrounds together, and they are interested in you as a human being. And I was really affected by that, so much so I've told that story to a couple people at the over at this weekend like retreat summit thingy. As an example of, this is what a community, this is why I think, I don't know what win means, but this is why Ember wins for me, is that the community is designed like that. And so they build that into the conference from foundationally. So from its tone in terms of community to the events, the way that the events were designed and how they were designed to not to to include alcohol, but not exclude people who don't drink. And I don't know, there was just something about the whole thing was just put together so thoughtfully with inclusiveness at its core. Anyway, I think I cannot take my hat off enough to Leah for putting on a pretty unbelievable conference.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was easy to attend.
Yeah, and if only we learned anything there.
I don't think it would have been perfect. I don't see how you could not.
So let's go through some highlights. Like, let's talk, what was it that, let's start with day one, and let's talk through some of the stuff on day one that stuck out to you.
Let's see. I guess the one of the talks that stuck out the most for me was Godfrey Chan's talk on working with Hacker News and how he wrote that custom Ember data adapter. And the demos that he gave were really cool. You know, the kind of point that the smaller point that he made was really cool, but I think he made a larger point in there that you don't quite get in the title of the talk, like hijacking Hacker News. And that was, for me, I thought was, he nailed a point that I've been trying to, that I often like dance around when I'm trying to explain to people why I think it's good to work, you know, kind of within or very close to a larger community and a larger framework. And the point that he made in there, and I don't know if you caught this, if it was, you know, one of those things that was just, you know, he really drilled it home, or if it was a subtle point. I don't know. It was hard because for me, it just like, you know, just punched me in the nose and the blood went flying and my mind was like leaking out my ears. Well, not quite that bad. But the point that he was making was, is when you have a large framework, if it's well designed, it's got a bunch of small modules that are loosely coupled. The only difference is whenever you're using small loosely coupled modules, like if you're going out and you're scouring the internet and you find, oh, I've got this, you know, parser here and this like, you know, templating thing here and this there and this there, you have to write the glue code to put it together. And if you have a quote unquote monolithic framework, if it's coherent inside, it's actually going to be built of a bunch of different modules, tiny modules. Now, these modules all ship together, but the thing that he said that I thought was really profound is that the adapters are written for you. Like, the tiny, small, decomposed, decoupled modules are there, but so are the adapters that connect them. And if so many times when you come and you say, oh, the reason I don't like big frameworks is I always end up fighting the framework. I almost always try and I'm fighting with its opinions. I'm doing this, and what I'm trying to do just won't really fit in. And it's been my experience that usually what's really happening is there's some class that you just don't you don't know about. You need to take like you were talking about the discovery of push payload, right? Mm-hmm. That would be a great example. That just came up this morning. If you'd only known about that method, like 4 days of fighting, quote unquote, fighting the framework would have been gone. But, you know, the thing is you really kind of need to Google within the framework rather than Google in the large. And most of the time, you can invest in learning the internal APIs of the framework and really get at those loosely coupled components to do any task that you want.
But a lot of that, Charles, a lot of that comes from very thoughtful design. And so Ember has become very thoughtfully designed. And it was designed from the outset, but it was certainly very thoughtfully designed in this way. And I heard it described recently as a layered approach, where you have a top layer where a consumer of your framework has a very simple API to consume. And if you're thoughtfully designing stuff, you design the API layer just underneath that. So those hooks, and you talk about they talk about seams or edges of the API. And so you want to design two layers of the API, one for consumers of the framework and two for customizers of the framework, for people that need to drop down a level. And so that what you're talking about is that second, how thoughtful is the design around the second layer? And so when you Google in within the framework, you're referring to like basically pulling up Dash, right?
Right.
And saying, okay, hang on, what methods do I have available to me if I'm in Ember data and I'm not and I want to bypass a piece of this, knowing that Ember data is made in a modular way where there's the adapter that actually does the talking to the server, and there's a serializer, and I want to bypass the adapter part for talking to the server. You can do that. And I think a lot of that came from Rails, from the rewrite of Rails, really, in Rails 3. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, Yehuda Katz is involved in both of those, where he's like, hey, you know what's really nice is instead of this big globby framework in Rails 2, if we cut this into blocks and tie the blocks together with seams that have a public API, people will be a lot easier for them to rip out the test framework and install the test framework of their choice without monkey patching a whole bunch of stuff.
Right. But you actually see it in, you see it in Ember, you see it in Rails, you see it in Spring, you see it, I've experienced this in Hibernate and Java Swing. I do think this is something you see a lot in lots of different languages and lots of different environments. And go watch Godfrey's talk. He said it very succinctly and very well in much less time that we've spent on it. You can just go watch it. But it was really good.
And it was hilarious. It was one of the funniest talks I've ever seen. It was. I mean, I said it was Tender Love worthy, and he said it was more like a Tender Love ripoff. But it was very, very funny. He's humble, and it was his first conference talk. I totally agree. Seriously, every talk was fantastic, and so trying to parse through and pick the ones that were, it's really more about the ones that stick out in terms of sticking our brain right now, rather than the ones that were best, because that's a ludicrous concept, because they were all like A across the board. And that is not true of many of the conferences I've been to. I've been to conferences where I was like, wow, that conference could have lost half of its talks and it would have been just fine. And I would have only had to be there for half the time. And this was just not like that. There was a couple of cool announcements. Luke Melia gave an announcement on day one that they were going to merge all of the disparate. Yehuda's talked in the past.
That was
about
exciting.
Yeah, an experimentation phase and then a community building phase when you're like this open closed deal where there's open mode where everybody's kind of experimenting, and then the experimentation kind of wraps and you merge things back together. And so the experimentation phase in deploying Ember apps is coming to a close, and they're merging the 3 to 5 largest Ember deployments.
I think there were six.
Six? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, six or
so. So they're merging all
seven,
those into one project and having everybody put their thinking into it, because they figured out that they were philosophically aligned as to what they were doing. They were just kind of all tackling it out of for reasons of, I want to get my Ember app deployed and I'm going to publish this thing about it. And then that creates this sort of paralysis of choice for the community. And they go, hey, are there philosophical differences that we need to keep separate, or do we want to align these? And they said, yeah, we're all aligned. Okay, smush. And they're in this week, they're in the process of merging all of those projects into one Ember deploy project, which is awesome.
Yeah, no, it is awesome. And everybody's going to benefit so much.
And apparently Ember's getting a little faster in the future. I heard a thing about it. I don't know. There was some, it was Glitter, I think. It was shipyourenemiesglitter.com. I want to set up shipyourenemiesglimmer. Shipyourenemiesglimmer.com. We send rival frameworks faster implementations of their view rendering layer. And Glitter.
At the same time.
Yep, at the same time. That should be fun. Yeah, so, I am impervious to hype. I cannot be moved by it. And so until it ships, I'll wait and see. But I mean, I know I heard some post-conference chatter about the code itself, and about when it was time for Tom and Yehuda to present it to the rest of the core team. The core team was pretty impressed with how clean the code already was, and so it's close. I think it may be closer to shipping than people realize. Mm-hmm. So we'll see that start coming down through the beta releases in the next couple months. So,
and that's exciting. Honestly. You know, it is really exciting. Although I have to say, it's also not exciting. Like that for me, performance.
Because it's part of, yeah, it's just what you expect to have happen.
Exactly. And whether for me, whether it comes in 6 weeks or it comes in 3 months, like we don't, I feel like the, in the cases where we have encountered performance issues, we have very well-known workarounds on how to get it. And yeah, it's inconvenient. And it's the kind of thing where it's a thorn in your side. But at this point, it's really kind of like a, you know, it's a thumbtack in your pocket versus a rusty nail in the middle of the road. And, you know, whether it gets, if it gets resolved in the next 6 months, you know, I think that's great. And that's, you know, that's another reason I like the fact that you can just, that this is just going to happen. And in retrospect, you look at like the whole HTML bars thing and it seems so normal now that it's actually in the framework. Doesn't it feel kind of funny that it felt so urgent?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, every week that this is delayed is just like another black mark on the name of Ember.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know. I don't stress about that stuff. But maybe, like I said, maybe it's because, you know, maybe because I'm old. Life moves slow for me.
There's something interesting, though. I think you bring up a good point. It just seemed normal when it happened. Like, oh, HTML bars is in my framework now. And I didn't stop working because it wasn't there. But now that it is there, like I was frankly like, I'm not sure how we'll use this faster rendering, like what it will enable me to do that I couldn't do before, because I don't build the kind of apps that they were talking about you just couldn't do before. Like I've been able to do everything that I want to do with Ember. Like I haven't told somebody like, nope, you can't do that. Ember sucks at this because of performance.
Someone actually handed me a database monitoring application that caused an epileptic fit, I would fire them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I loved it. At the end, Chris Epstein was like, that's a terrible user experience. So you're fighting over who gets to ship this thing that's just a crappy user experience. Are you? And that's literally the first thing I thought of too. It was like, wait, why is this pathological use case being optimized for, first off? Anyway,
right.
But setting that aside.
To the greater point, I think it's good, and and this is actually something that Matthew Beal said to me at dinner on Monday. He said, you know, it's good that we can just get that out of the conversation, and we can now focus on the larger value proposition of the Ember framework.
Yeah, I was frankly more impacted by block params shipping.
Yeah,
like hey,
seriously.
Here's block params. Like, oh my gosh, that's going to change how I build components. Now I like building components instead of hate it. Like that is a result of HTML bars, and so HTML bars coming in, allowing something like block params, like all that stuff. That's the stuff that changes how I work. And then the simplification stuff that they're doing to allow new people to ramp up faster, like all of those are the things. And so I agree that the idea was, let's see how little effort it's going to take to give people a bunch of benefit and change the tone of the conversation so we can go back to focusing on the architectural things that Ember allows you to do in designing great front-end experiences.
Right. So I'm glad, I'm excited, but maybe not for the performance itself, but the excited for the prospect of not needing to talk about it in every conversation that we have.
Yep. I loved Lauren Elizabeth Tan's talk about ambitious UX. I love the fresh perspective she's bringing. She comes, I believe she came from more of a design background and is getting into Ember, but she's really good at it.
Yeah.
She's already really good.
Came from a design background, but all the code on those slides was tight.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. She's clearly good at Ember, and she's good at explaining it to other people. Mm-hmm. And she's doing some cool stuff in it and shipping things. But I love the confluence of that place where, like, what technology now enables you to do that you couldn't do before, and great experiences for people. And she really dove into that and talking about her, like the cute loading messages that you get in Slack. How can you do that in an Ember app? She's written blog posts about this in the past. But she basically kind of expounded on, this is the kind of stuff that you can do now that people might take for granted that a year and a half ago you wouldn't do, because if you're rendering stuff in a server-side framework, you wouldn't sit there and while it was waiting to load your page or whatever, show a cool message that, you know, like there's just these sort of things that a new style of application that feels more like a native or mobile app, you have the ability to create more playful experiences for people. So man, there's a million of these. Are we going to have to do two of these?
I think follow-ups? We're basically at time, and we've got, we haven't even covered 10% of the material. So I think we're going to have to do a follow-up.
All right. Can we end on just, Torrens talk? really fast. We don't. There's not that much to say about it because, like, I can't sit here and just tell
just
you how
watch
amazing it.
It
was. Yeah, just watch it. I don't want to like.
It was
just
ice
watching,
cold, man.
He was Iceman. That's what I. That's it. He is Iceman. That's what it is. He just like laser, like a laser that outputs vim at the keyboard. So I heard the person behind me. And like the next day, somebody was talking, and all I heard was Torrance talk. It was like watching the Terminator code.
What did it come? It's like 35 minutes of straight live coding.
Yeah, 35 minutes
and an
live coded in
built.
Vim, and it built test drove an entire app.
Yep.
And then he changed out the at the end. He changed out the. All right, ripped out all of his old HTML, dropped in new HTML and CSS, completely changed it.
Verified that all the tests pass, and then boom,
and then
up came the app.
Shut his computer down and walked away without saying anything. It was the ultimate conference talk mic drop. I've never seen anything like that in my life. It was the best live code talk I think maybe that's ever been given. Yep. It was certainly up there in the top five all time. I think it's going to go down as one of the top five all time live code talks.
Yeah,
it was,
it'd be hard to top that.
It was amazing. Like, I'm so glad we had him before he gave that talk because everybody is going to want to talk to him now. And so instead, I want to have him back just to talk about that and the way he tests. And it seemed really simpatico with the way that we like to do things.
Yeah.
Very, very philosophically similar to the way that we write our applications. Very acceptance test driven. And but he did it. He made it look effortless, which means that there was probably a tremendous amount of effort that went into it. Anyway, I just thought that was amazing. Man, there's so much more. Charles, we're going to have to do a part two. We've never done this before.
Never done.
We're
going
to have to do a part two.
A double stuff. Actually, we had to do a double stuff, but not
we did,
two
well,
episodes.
We did it all at once. Yeah, we're going to have to.
I think this is
going
to have to be like quadruple decker or something like that.
No. We can wrap the rest of this tomorrow. All we had to,
we'll
we went
disciplined.
Off a little bit of tangent. Yeah.
Precision and discipline, my friend.
I mean,
that's what we're known for. Discipline. Did you know that we march around the office just for the hell of it?
Did you know that like, directly before this podcast, we were singing Metallica at the top of our lungs? I think... so close, no matter how far.
Well, it's because Stanley's got this little spit mask in front of his microphone that's got really like...
It's not as... Charles, it's called a pop filter.
I know it's a pop filter, but I'm having
enjoyment. It's not to protect your microphone from your... Anyway,
I know.
Hey, Charles, guess what? It was really fun to go to EmberConf with you. This team, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We got to give away a CD that literally every single person I handed it to said one of two things. I don't have a CD player. What am I supposed to do with this? Or I have a CD player and I'm scared to put this in my computer because it says Web 3.0, install this on your computer. So I feel like that was a major accomplishment for us. I think it was a successful EmberConf. I certainly enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
All right, Charles, let's get out of here, and I guess we'll pick up part two, record it later this week, and release it as our next one.
All right, sweet.
All right.
Take it easy.
Talk to you later, man.